Great. Thanks very much, and welcome everybody who is joining us live for another episode of our MSDN Geek Speak series. As mentioned, my name is Glenn Gordon. I'm a developer evangelist with Microsoft, and my co-host today is Brian Hitney. Brian, how's it going?
It's going good, Glenn. How you doing? I'm Brian Hitney. I'm a developer evangelist as well. Actually, Glenn and I work together in the southeast United States, so we're often... Today we're not together in person, but usually we are, so it's kind of weird doing a webcast with you.
Yeah, that is true, although we're still several hours away. We are together online today. So just to remind everybody, if you've never been to a Geek Speak before, it's a little bit different type of presentation. Instead of having a presentation we kind of go through from start to finish, Brian and I are going to be your proxies to ask questions of our host or of our guest today, which we'll bring on in a minute. But just to give you some background, Brian and I work a lot with the developer community. We do presentations for user groups, so we go out and attend the meetings, and we run into quite a few folks that are really experts at a lot of Microsoft technology and bring unique perspectives. They're not specifically Microsoft employees, but a lot of them are part of the MVP program, Microsoft Valuable Professional Program, and that gives them the opportunity to get exposure to the product teams and really dig into a lot of the products and technologies that we have. So all that knowledge is out in the community, and with the Geek Speak series, it's our opportunity to bring those folks onto a webcast and then allow people to ask questions in real time. So we're going to encourage everybody to use that question and answer pane because we will be reading your questions aloud to our guests when we bring them on in just a moment. So, Brian, what's going on in your neck of the woods from a developer community perspective?
Good question. Well, the biggest thing we have coming up is on Saturday the 30th, which is about a week and a half away, in Columbia, South Carolina, we have a code camp. And for those that have never been to a code camp before, it's basically like a mini conference. You register, you show up, it's free to attend, and you get a schedule, and you pick what sessions you want to go to, and usually there's about five or six different tracks, and really quite a amazing event to go to, and it's all free to attend, and lunch and everything else is provided free. So. If you're in the southeast U.S., check it out.
Yeah, we've got one in Mobile, actually, Mobile, Alabama, this weekend. So
that's right. I remember that on the 23rd, right?
Yep. And code camps are a great way to cut your teeth as a presenter as well, because you just pick a topic you're interested in, put together some material, and lo and behold, you'll have an audience, and they're usually pretty easy going on new presenters. So that's a lot of fun. And we've got the Mixed Conference coming up in a couple of months. A lot of cool announcements. Actually, that's in March, right?
Yeah, it's going to be in mid-March, I think the 15th through 17th, if memory serves. Now, before that, we're really starting to hit the ground with our MSDN event series that's coming up in some areas in only a couple of weeks.
That's true.
Right, and that's going to be all on Windows Azure, which I think is pretty exciting. That's coming up shortly, depending on where you're at, but it could be a couple weeks away.
And they're all listed right now on msdnevents.com, which is pretty nice. They have a little map you can zoom in on to find events near you, so that's pretty cool. Excellent. So, as I mentioned, Brian and I frequent code camps and other events, and we run into folks that are pretty well-versed in a lot of Microsoft technologies, and it just so happens that our guest we have today is Ed Blankenship, and Ed has recently relocated to the Charleston area, so that puts him smack dab in the middle of Brian and my territory in the U.S. So we're excited to have Ed come on today as a guest. So Ed, how's it going?
Hey, doing well.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about how you got into Team System and how you got into technology in general. And it looks like a photo was taken on the beach. Is that right?
No, it's actually July 4th weekend. I have a beer in my hand.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I was actually thinking I was going to crop that out, but I said, "Nah, what the heck?"
And it gives it some character. So, yeah, I've got a Carolina koozie on it. It's pretty bad. I'm a Clemson fan, so I've already been here too long, so I already picked sides. But yeah, I've been involved with technology for a little while. I was in the Navy for a few years, and then afterwards, I started back in Texas as a software developer.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there was this brand new beta product that was coming out called Visual Studio Team System and Team Foundation Server 2005. And at the place that I was at, we were trying to solve some of the same problems that TFS kind of solved. Mm-hmm. And so we basically just picked it up, and I started with it, and there's a lot of pain back in the day, especially with 2005 Beta 2. So I had quite a few phone conversations with the product teams, and at the time TFS actually came out, probably about 6 months after that, there was basically no one with that kind of experience. So I ended up going in consulting for the first time, just doing TFS stuff. And then it got picked up by Infragistics, so I spent 3 years at Infragistics as the TFS administrator and that kind of stuff. There were some other things that I did. And then now I'm back to consulting on the East Coast here in Charleston. So
that's very
quite
cool.
A ride.
It sounds like a very unique position, because I know a lot of people that work with TFS, basically they implement it at their own site and maybe customize it a little bit. But you've had an opportunity to move around to a variety of clients, I guess, and do some very interesting installs and possibly migrations, which is, I guess, related to the topic we're going to talk about today, right?
Absolutely. And I'm really glad that I spent actually at Infragistics, we had a whole team that managed TFS. There's five of us. We did other things like installer development, and we managed the build processes and things like that for all of our products. But my whole job at Infragistics over the 3 years was to implement the Team System and really leverage everything out of Team System. So,
very cool.
So, yeah, and we migrated from SourceSafe as well. So we got quite a bit of experience from migrating from VSS. TFS. So hopefully we can get into a little bit of that in today's session.
Cool. So I've moved us on to a slide that's just sort of an anchor slide for the conversation. It's got our Twitter IDs on the bottom there, so you can find us online. And let's just talk a little bit about, the role of TFS in software development these days and SourceSafe, and how the need for source code control have changed over time. And, if people have maybe come from an area where their source code control is, I'm going to just put some stuff in a zip file and stick it on a thumb drive or something. Let's talk about the benefits of TFS and how to get there.
Sure. Well, specifically around version control itself, one of the things, what is the reason why we don't just have a folder somewhere that I have the latest version in and just work from there? Because you don't know when you're going to mess up. You don't know when you need to go back to a previous version of something. That's one of the biggest ones. Even for personal development, I've got a TFS server on my laptop, which is we're actually going to be demoing from.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I just need to know why did I write this particular method, or when did I write that method, and what does that relate to? We start talking about other things, like what work did that, what bug fix did that fix, or what?
Interesting.
Does that play in? Like, I have something out in production right now, but I'm working, on my next version. How can I get production's version of code? And then tie in those bug fixes back to the current version, so you're not having to do manual work. So really, that's what version control is all about, even for personal use.
Right. I think a lot of people's misperception is, they hear the word team in it, and they think, I got to have a big development team. But I think even in the course of one person.
Absolutely. And I hope we show a few things today that even for personal development will make sense if you're a one-man shop.
So. Right. The other caveat I mentioned to folks is, comments are nice, but you really just can't rely on comments for explaining this is what I was trying to fix at this time. It becomes crazy.
Exactly.
A lot of times, too, development teams need some type of ability to do regression testing, and you have to maintain different builds for different environments, and you just can't do that without some kind of real advanced versioning control.
Exactly. And to know let's say you have your typical development, QA, and production environments, what bug fixes are in which environments at the moment? So. Mm. A lot of those kinds of questions are able to be answered by having some kind of version control system. We're going to be talking about TFS today, but a lot of those same goals can be solved with any kind of version control system.
Well, do you want to open up a demo maybe and show us the basics of TFS for those of us who haven't seen it, and then
Yeah.
You can start addressing maybe some of the specific issues on moving from Visual Source Safe.
Yeah, so before I start any kind of team system or TFS talk, I always have to show this one. In tradition of the geek speak way, I have one slide, so I have to do this one slide, and we'll get it out of the way, and we'll get straight to demos. But let me get that shared to you.
Okay.
So basically, it's a diagram of what Team System actually is and how it all plays together. And this happens to be the 2010 diagram, so everything should be settled, and I know we're only in beta 2 right now, but this should be the final one. But you can see here that we've got, let me see if I can't get a little cursor going here. We've basically got Team Foundations over here in the middle, and the server component of all this is really the central spoke of everything. So you can see that Team Foundation Server does have version control, which is a lot of what we'll be talking about today. But in the same system, we also have things like requirements management, project management, bug tracking is not one on here, but bug tracking is one of those that's on here. Some of the new features that we do have in 2010 is test case management. So instead of having something like HP Quality Center out there, you can have your test cases right in here. And by having requirements and test cases in the same system, you now have, you can provide traceability between the different things. Then we've got an automated build system, and let me tell you, this is one of my favorite features of 2010, and we'll talk about this if we have some time later about how as a simple team or even a one-man shop you can set up an automated build and kind of some of the benefits you'll get from that. There's reporting, so everything that is in Team System or TFS has some kind of metric behind the scenes for it. And then we've got another new product called Team Lab, which is basically a bunch of, you can basically have a virtual lab environment inside your software development lifecycle, and TFS can manage it for you. For example, if you have your testers wanting to run test cases in a virtual lab where you've had a build actually go and create a new lab environment and deploy the build to it and run automated tests, then you could absolutely do that. So with everything in the same system, we're not able to get kind of all that traceability between one another.
Very nice.
So we do get some Visual Studio SKUs this time. So we used to have different team editions, like for software developers, database professionals, architects, and testers. And they kind of got rid of that. So now we've got Professional, which is similar to the old Professional SKU. And then we've got Premium and Ultimate. So Premium's got some of the features. It's got database and developer features and some testing features. And then Ultimate's got everything. It's got the architecture stuff. It's got test case management, lab management. And then there's this side SKU, so if you have some manual testers or what we like to call generalist testers instead of technical testers, then there's another product there. So,
you mentioned the database edition. I think that's pretty cool, especially when we're talking about the idea of Team Foundation as a source code repository.
Yeah.
And that a lot of people don't keep a repository, they don't keep source code for their SQL queries and their views and that sort of stuff. And
yeah,
I don't think people can do that in Source Safe easily, right?
No. Thankfully, now that we've got some Team Explorer goodness with inside Visual Studio 2010 and 2008, you can actually store your schema for the database stuff, the schema itself inside of version control. And so
that's very cool.
The same way that we were able to see methods and types being added to a C# project or something like that, we can see when columns get added, tables, store procedures change over time. And the same thing, if there's a bug fix that needs to happen to the store procedure, we can merge those between different branches and the different environments as well. So we can take advantage of a lot of the same stuff. So it's really kind of cool. There's several other features. Thankfully, now everyone who has the Premium Edition just gets those database features.
Nice.
So and that works with SQL Server, Oracle, DB2. There are some other, what do they call them? Like add-ins that are going to be available later on for integrating with other products. But we're hoping that everyone here uses SQL Server. So
yeah.
So Ed, I have a question. I think this is going to lead a little bit into your demo, but one question we have from the floor here is your opinion on upgrading from SourceSafe and basically what the risks and concerns are when you upgrade, say, a larger enterprise-scale application from SourceSafe.
Yeah, okay. So how good is the upgrade wizard from upgrading from SourceSafe? So it's actually not a wizard per se. We're going to get into it. It's actually just a little command line app. But if you follow the specific steps to make sure that you test out your migration and everything, there really isn't that much risk, especially if you're testing out. And thankfully, the converter is all set up to help you things out and let you know what potential issues you might have before you actually ever migrate. So we'll definitely get through that and what the typical sequence of a SourceSafe migration would be. So maybe we should just jump into that and talk a little bit about that.
I think people want to see maybe the basics of, if they've got Visual Studio and TFS, how they work together, and then maybe we can look at the migration stuff too.
Yeah, okay. All right, so I just shared my desktop here, so hopefully everyone's able to see it. And I've got Visual Studio 2010 open. And what we want to do is I've got a VSS database locally here that I want to basically import into this folder right here, the AdventureWorks folder. I've already got a main branch here started with another one of my WinForms applications. So you can see that we can do a whole new, basically a repository if we want, or we can migrate into something else. And the way that we can do this is basically we have two phases of the conversion process. We need to do an analyze phase, and then we actually go through and migrate. So the first step we want to do is check to see if there's going to be any issues, because there are differences between VSS and TFS. Some of those differences are things like the architecture. So VSS uses a network share, basically, and stores individual files for its version history, whereas TFS actually uses a SQL Server. And so some of the problems we had with the way that VSS store things is that it was easily corrupted. It was easily corrupted, and you ended up with some integrity issues, especially like, for example, what if I'm checking in something that's SourceSafe and my network connection goes out? Well, it doesn't happen in a transactional kind of way. It doesn't roll back your check-in. It just, the first, whatever files made it, and the other files didn't make it. So you end up with some reliability problems. Another thing is that VSS doesn't scale very well, especially across a WAN. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Ever tried to use one of the things that InfraDistics that kind of moved us towards TFS is that we had VSS databases, but we had offices around the world. We had development labs in Bulgaria, India, Tokyo, Japan, in Uruguay. We had people all over the world. And if you ever tried to connect to a VSS database over VPN while you're in another country, just go get yourself coffee, five for dinner.
Yeah.
So it just wasn't working. So,
right. It was like the old Microsoft Mail with a local post office on a network share versus a true server with a client. Yeah.
Exactly. And so now that we've got there's actually a proxy server that you can install in remote offices that kind of caches things and helps things out a little bit. But even VPN across the wire to the real server, it's super fast. So that's one of the things. And then here's the big part, and this is why we need to do an analyze, is that there are some features that don't have parity with features in TFS. So these are kind of deprecated, and personally, I'm glad that they're deprecated. We've seen some horror stories in the past about how people have used them, but Most notably is sharing. There is no sharing in TFS as it was in VSS. Pinning, there's no pinning as well. But what the VSS converter will do is we'll take your pins and create labels from them. So that'll get migrated over. The other two smaller things that people sometimes like are archive and restore. So there's a different way of backing up TFS than what VSS had, and there's not really like an archive kind of thing. And then keyword expansion. And if you don't know what keyword expansion is, then you're not missing a whole lot. But some people actually take, you know, they really like it and stuff. But just so you know, those are some things that aren't in TFS, and I'm kind of glad that sharing and pinning, for one, are not in TFS. So. Mm-hmm. But that's what this analyze phase is for. So I basically have this analyze settings file here, and it's super simple. It's basically an XML file that you create, and you give it a source, which is the VSS database location. I happen to have it on my local C drive, but normally you put your WAC network share kind of thing. And then you just give it the location inside of the source-safe database that you want to migrate. Maybe you don't migrate everything. And we'll talk a little bit about since you have an opportunity of switching systems, take that opportunity to do some cleanup.
Right.
So, for example, you don't need to migrate everything over into TFS. Another thing that we did at Infragistics was we decided on a branching and merging strategy, and we'll talk a little bit about branching and merging features, but this may be a good time to actually set up, you know, what your branching and merging strategy will be. The next thing, the other thing that we did at Infragistics that we took advantage of the switchover was we actually reorganized the source code inside of TFS. So I had a specific way because each product team was storing source code a different way, and some people had to work between different teams, so it was always like, where's the installer stuff, or where is the build scripts, and where is the source code kept for this product? And we kind of came up with a specific top-level like branch folders for people to use for that. So I guess the takeaway for that is, since you're moving to a new system anyway, take this time to you know, basically clean up house. Do some of those those things that you've always wanted to do. So,
right.
And one of those right here is just picking one thing or picking what you want to switch over. So if you don't want to switch over the entire thing, maybe you just want to pick up the main branch and move it into the new main branch, then you can absolutely do that.
How did you get this XML file in the first place? Did you start migration? Or?
There is on the MSDN library. I'll have to get a URL for everyone.
Sure.
But there's a sample XML file that you can use to start out with.
Okay. And just as a reminder to the listeners, we'll be posting a follow-up post to the GeekSpeak blog, which is at blogs.msdn.com/geekspeak. We've got the URL on the slides. We'll be posting a link up there to everything that we've got talking about on the show today. Like this template.
Awesome. All right. So basically, the analyze part is pretty simple. I'm trying to move my little command line, my command prompt here. It's pretty simple. This first phase, all you have to do is say, where's the VSS database and what are you intending to migrate? So from here, we just basically tell the VSS converter that we're wanting to do an analyze, and this is not going to do anything. It's not going to migrate anything. It's just going to check to see, you know, is there any corruption in your database? Is there, you know, give me all the issues that you could absolutely think to give me. So, and then all I have to do is put analyze settings here, and then it'll go through. It'll ask me for the VSS administrator password, so you'll need to know that. That's definitely something you'll need to know. This one happens to be blank. So it's going to go through here, scan everything, make sure that everything's kosher. It's not a very big one, but
no.
I made sure that for this demo it wasn't very big. All right, so we get right here we can see that there's 91 files and 8 folders, There's one warning, so we'll want to make sure we check that out. But zero errors, so that's good. And then we get a pre-migration report file, so it's this VSS analysis report. So if I come back over here, wait a second, I'm trying to find. All right, I've got a few files that were created here.
Mm-hmm. Ed, you still there?
Uh-oh.
Sorry about that. My cell phone seemed to go out. All right, so what I wanted to show everyone was that we only had analyze settings and migrate settings from at first, so we've got these other files here. The analysis report will tell us all the different information about it, and then we'll go through a few of the other things that were created as artifacts from the analyze phase. So just open this up in Internet Explorer, you can see that what was actually analyzed in VSS, you'll get warnings and errors, and it looks like the only warning is telling us that the binding information is going to be converted after the migration, which is really cool. So this is a new feature. I forget if it was in 2010 or 2008 Service Pack 1, but all of the old source-based bindings that are stored in the solution files and everything mm-hmm. are actually going to be turned into TFS binding. Huh. So you don't have to do any manual work of rebinding, you know, your solution and project files. So that's really cool. Be sure to use the latest VSS converter whenever you do a VSS conversion, because they add little features like that every once in a while. So
okay.
If there's a Service Pack 1 that comes out later on for 2010, be sure you install that. So yeah, we didn't get any errors here. We would get let known about things like if we were using sharing or pinning. It'll let us know all of those details. So just be sure to take a look at everything, make sure that looks all kosher. And then if it is, then we can move on to working on our migrate setting. So one of the things that people do run into is that in VSS, we basically had named users mm-hmm. That were not like our Windows account names or our Active Directory names. And TFS actually uses Active Directory and Windows accounts for security. So one of the things you could do if you need to is map source-safe names to Windows names if they're different. So for example, sometimes even if you have people who have left the company and you have a source-safe database that's 10 years old and they're not even in Active Directory anymore, then you may want to basically map that to some kind of placeholder account, some account, because TFS has to have some kind of name for it.
But those, so this is where accounts will have had to have been added to TFS already before you can have the importer assign the code to them, right?
Basically, yes. So what happened was it actually went through the Visual Studio encountered an exception.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. So it actually created this user map file. I actually only had two user accounts inside of this VSS database, and that was an administrator and admin. But if I wanted to, I could actually specify who that maps to. I'm not going to specify anything. But this is something good to know if you run into that situation. So let's open up the migrate setting, because they're a tad bit different from the analyze setting, in that now we basically say we have the source folder in source-safe, and we now have to tell it where in TFS to put it. So I'm going to put it in the main branch inside of this AdventureWorks folder. And then we also have to tell it, well, which Team Foundation server to use. So we've got, I basically give it the information, including what Team Project Collection I'm actually connecting to, because now you can have multiple Team Project Collections for a TFS server. Hmm. So it's pretty simple, and if we're ready, we can test our migration out to a test TFS server somewhere, so you can kind of get an idea of how long it might take to migrate. That's always a good one to know. Because you don't want to be migrating in the middle of the day because people are usually working on source code in the middle of the day.
Right.
So ours took, we just had a downtime for a whole weekend, and we migrated from like 8 different VSS databases into one TFS server. It took us about a weekend. We had quite a bit of stuff to migrate. Hmm. But Monday morning, everyone just came back, and we put VSS in read-only mode in case people wanted to get back to stuff that we didn't migrate. And then everyone picked up TFS. So let's get back to here. I'll show you exactly what happens here, and I'll show you that this folder is actually empty, so there's no trickery going on. And all we have to do is go VSS converter, migrate this time, and then give migrate settings. And it should ask for the password at some point here. All right, so it basically gives us a summary of what's about to happen and makes sure that this is all right. So that all looks good, and we'll just say yes. VSS administrator password, and there it goes. Hmm. It's going to start going through, and it's actually going to go through all the history and create chain sets for us.
So you actually get the transactional stuff that's in the that's in source code.
Exactly. Yeah. And if we come over here and look, I think it's finished. Did it say it was finished here? Yep. Okay, so it's all finished. There were no warnings or errors, so we're good to go here. And if I were to come here and refresh this, we see new folders now. And if I come to history, let me just say that my sample database doesn't have a whole lot of history in it. But there are a few transactions in here. And you can see that we've got VSS converter kind of stuff. So you'll notice that the timestamp is different. So the timestamp in TFS is going to be when it actually migrated. But it will go ahead and keep the old timestamp of when that actually happened. So this happened on 10/18/2005, this AdventureWorks database. So you can see the different information. And you'll see who actually did it at the time, too. So there you go. You'll get a whole list of history with who did it, the original comment in VSS, and the date time that they actually did it. So
Ed, suppose you've got a really large database that maybe goes back years. Could I say migrate everything, say, this year only and basically truncate old stuff?
Unfortunately, that's not a feature. So either you can have the latest version or you have to get all the history. So that kind of sucks in a way. But some people do decide that they just want the latest version. So they'll pick a point in their release, a specific milestone, and say, from this point on, we're going to be in TFS, but if you need to look at history, you can go back to a read-only copy of the VSS database that sits around.
Right. Gotcha. So,
yep.
I mean, I suppose there's always an option for taking only the latest version, pulling that out of SourceSafe, and then just adding it to Team Foundation from Visual Studio.
Oh, yeah, and that's actually a common technique, especially if you're migrating from other kinds of systems that don't have converters in place, things like Subversion or CVS or Perforce or something like that, where there aren't really, there's not a converter for them for history. Basically, they take a copy of it and then at a specific milestone and say, you know what, from this point forward, we're going in TFS.
Okay.
So
here's a great question from Sharon. She wants to know, what was the learning curve like for the developers going from VSS to TFS? So, I mean, that's a little bit of a tough question because the UI for Visual Studio has evolved over time. But in general, you know, what are we looking at?
Well, the nice thing is they did keep parity on common kind of things. So check in, check out, get latest version, all that is pretty much the same. Right from Solution Explorer, we don't have something open, but you can check out, check in, and do all that straight from Solution Explorer. So it's going to be similar to the way that VSS integration was inside of Visual Studio.
Okay.
Now, there is there is some learning curve in that some of the concepts are different. So now we have things like chain sets. A chain set is a unit of work that goes in together at the same time. So there are things like that, and I actually have a really good, I'll have to find it, but there is a good white paper that's called From VSS to TFS. As a developer, the things you need to know that are different. And it kind of highlights things like workspaces. And then one of the really cool features is shelf sets. So that's one of the ones. Yeah, a shelf set is not, you're not checking in a change directly here, but you're keeping the change on the server to where you can pass it on to someone else if you like, or later on if you want to get back to a shelf set of work. So it's not really checking it in to where others are getting it when they do get latest version, but it at least puts it on the server so that it can be backed up and that kind of thing. So instead of, I used to know some companies who had the policy of, you know, before you leave work every day, you have to check in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what if your code is broken?
Right, don't break the build. That's the mantra, don't break the build.
Yeah. So now I say at least shelve before you go to work, before you go home every day from
right.
work.
So it's kind of like instead of just having a lot of teams have their own individual branch, it's almost like a personal branch off of, say, a team branch or something like that, right?
Exactly. And now that we're talking about branching, I always like to tell people that branches aren't candy. Each branch costs you something. So thankfully in TFS we don't have to have things like personal branches. The way I usually like to do it is I like to have, for most people this works, so I like to have a dev, a main, and a release branch. And I like to keep it down to that, and there are other types of branching emerging strategies out there, and once you get familiar with kind of what your requirements are and that kind of thing, then you can break out into those other things. But for most people, dev, main, and release works out really well because they usually have three environments. They have a dev environment, a QA environment, and a production environment. So that works out really well with branches.
Okay. Ed, what about the scenarios where you've built rules? Because I know one of the things that's cool about Team Foundation Server is you can set it up so that when you go to check in your code, there may be rules in place for coding standards and that sort of thing. What happens to your migrated code that you're trying to pull in?
Yeah, so what you're referring to is check-in policies.
Yeah,
so,
check-in policies.
Yeah, that's one of the really cool things about TFS is that we can enable different check-in policies. Now, for when it comes to VSS migration, I usually say go ahead and turn off all policies before the migration, so that you don't have any issues with checking it in. But I believe it actually overrides all of them if you do have any in place.
Okay.
Anyway, but yeah, you can set up check-in policies. So some of the ones that are available out of the box are things like, this one's available with the power tools, if you install the power tools. But basically things like it requires users to provide check-in comments or associating this work with some kind of work item. And we haven't talked a lot about work items, but a work item could be something like a bug or a task or a requirement or a test case or something like that.
Sure.
You can actually set these up. And if someone doesn't meet them, then they'll actually get warnings, policy warnings, before they check in that they actually need to meet before checking in. So it's a really good way to keep your system clean and stuff. So it's really a good thing.
So that means you'll have code in there that won't meet the policies if you do an import from SourceSafe.
Well, it's possible. So things like if someone didn't put a comment in, then you'll have a chain set that gets migrated over without a comment on it. So yeah, you will have code that didn't meet your policies in place, since VSS didn't have the ability of check-in policies.
Okay. But is there any way to resolve that once it's been migrated over? Can you get a report and say, okay, now that this is in here, can somebody go in and update comments or, otherwise do something to resolve the policy violation?
Sure. I think if we were to take a view history here, you could see a lot of mine that I didn't put any comments on. But if someone has permissions, they could go through here and they could open it up, put a comment in, save it. They won't be able to add work item associations in there, but from the work item, you could add a change set link back to that change set. So there are definitely ways to correct all of that.
Okay.
There's not really an automated report kind of thing for you. But most of the time, people don't normally, they're not too concerned about code that got migrated. They're concerned about stuff that goes forward just to make sure that it's good to go.
Right. Well, I think that there's places where you have coding standards that need to be followed.
Yep.
Absolutely. Probably what you can do is just check it out and then try to check it back in, and then you'd have to work through those policy violations right there.
Yeah, especially like, for example, like if you were to put that you need to do unit tests, unit tests and have them successful, or the code analysis policy, or analysis rules and stuff like that. Yeah, the next time someone actually checks in, those policies will be in place. So the stuff that you migrated over, if there's a unit test that's failing at the time of migration, then there's going to be some work for people to actually get it up and running.
Got it. Okay.
I'm sorry, be able to successfully check in, because there's been code that's been bad that's been put over there. So, yeah. Yep.
Okay. So, Ed, one of the things that I don't know if we want to get into this now, but one of the things that I hear from a lot of people is they feel that TFS is targeting large-scale enterprise-type applications. What about single developer and using SharePoint? And what if you just need something simple for either one developer or only a few developers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So thankfully in TFS 2010, we've got some changes that actually help smaller teams and even individual developers. So the first one is, you can install TFS on a Windows 7 or Windows Vista computer. So I'm using Windows 7 now, and I've got TFS running here at localhost. So that's a big step forward. And there's a basic install that from the time that you have TFS downloaded, and if you already had the .NET framework set up already, it takes you about 30 minutes to set up and configure TFS out of the box. And what that does is it doesn't require you to have SharePoint running on your box or SQL reporting services. And it's a super simple wizard that goes through and sets everything up. And in 30 minutes, you're up and running. Now, what that does is why, even as a single developer or a small team, why would you want to do that? Well, we had a discussion a little while ago. So basically, you want to make sure that you keep history of things. You want to have different parallel development lines, so you're maintaining production and you're going forward. I can tell you that I have I actually have two team project collections on this local box, one that I use for tests. But then I also have another one that I actually do, like, personal development. So my blog site, I actually have a team project that's got the blog site and stuff in it, my web development. And I've got different things inside of there just for personal stuff. I mean, I'm the only one that's ever going to do that. Now, I may not use it heavily. Like, I'm not going to be tracking bugs and things like that. But I at least have some branches set up and some automated builds, and that's what I really want to get across to everyone. It's one of the new features in Team Build is a workflow-based build for 2010. And it's super simple to set up. So, yeah, you want to set that up?
Yeah, I think builds are really awesome because people who come from the SourceSafe world, they basically, you know, they check their code out and they hit F5 or they compile from Visual Studio. And having it driven through another tool besides Visual Studio in an automated way, I think it's pretty neat.
Exactly. And so Let's just create a build really quickly. I actually have this WinForms app. It's super simple. So let's create a new build definition here. We're just going to say our WinForms build. If I could get it, spell it correctly. And one of the cool things that you do get with the team TFS build system is that you can have different triggers here. So a common one that people like to do is continuous integration. So every time someone checks in something, you can kick off a new build and see if someone's broken the build, basically. There's rolling builds. You can schedule a build, something for nightly builds. Mm-hmm. But the new one that we have available now in TFS 2010 is called Gated Check-In. And so what Gated Check-In does is it will kick off a build before it allows a check-in to occur. So if a check-in, if the build succeeds, it will go ahead and commit the check-in. But if not, it will keep it as a shelf set.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool. So it prevents any bad code from actually making it to the latest version of the branch.
But bad code as it relates to building, not necessarily anything else.
Yeah, yeah. So this is the whole build has to succeed. So that you could set up for the build to compile all of the different solutions. You could have it deploy databases, run unit tests, run code analysis rules. If everything succeeds, then you can allow a check-in.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with this, I see, is how do you make fun of the guy who breaks the build? Because you can't break it now. So.
Well, but it is broken. It just doesn't make it all the way to the latest version. So there's a system tray app that's now installed with TFS that actually you can monitor as builds come through, and you can see exactly who broke the build. So it's a lot of fun. It just, they don't do as much harm because when you do the get latest version, you're not going to get their bad code in there. So it's a really cool feature.
One question from the floor before we dive too much more into build. Jumping back just slightly to the check-in policies you were talking about, can you specify these either on a per project? I noticed you had two projects, that you one for personal, and then can you specify different check-in policies for them, and not just on the project level, but what about on specific branches?
Yeah, so the way that it exists today, check-in policies actually happen at the team project level. So you might have lots of different projects inside of this team project, but the check-in policies are really scoped for the team project level. So all the branches that are in there and all the projects that you may have underneath that team project. So good question. Any other questions in the queue?
No, I think that's it so far. Glenn, you have anything on your end?
No, I had a point I wanted to make about builds, but I'll wait till Ed kind of goes through the basics of them.
Okay, cool. And actually, remind me, we've only got about 10 minutes left, but remind me, we want to talk about availability to MSDN subscribers.
Oh, right. Okay.
So we'll end off the session on a good note. But I just want to show you how quickly it is. We can say where to actually copy this stuff out to, so I'm going to put it in my drops location here, so our WinForms build. So this is where it actually will drop the folder out of all the compilation stuff. And then you can do a lot of different things like running automated tests, performing code analysis. If you have a source and symbol server, you can do that. There's a whole bunch of stuff that happens in here, but the only thing that you have to put in there is what's the solutions that you want to build. So I only have one of them, and I'm just going to say it's that solution right there. Say OK. If we had multiple solutions, we could put them in there. I can save that, and now we can queue a new build. And this will actually build itself. It could be, uh-oh, one second, I want to do the latest sources.
Right.
This will actually go through. This build server is on my machine right now. So single developers, you can have a build server that's right on your machine if you want. Or this could be out on another set of, like, 10 servers. What is going on here? Yeah, I've got some issues going on here. But let me – normally this should work. I've been doing some team build custom activities, so I want to see if I don't have any that I can show you.
But that's in essence what it does, is it uses the build server, it posts it up there, and then lets that guy pull down the latest version and do all the compilations.
Exactly.
Okay.
We actually have a demo collection out at our consulting company, so let me show you that really quickly. Show you the report.
By the way, I love how you're accessing with a fully qualified domain name. So obviously there is a port and some firewall somewhere that you're connecting.
Yep, I actually just did that last week. So we can expose that out to the internet through HTTPS. So if I look at all these, let's take a look and see some builds. I want to see a good one, like that one. We can actually see what chain sets were associated with this. If someone had worked with put some work items on here, it would show like all the bugs that were fixed, all the features that were implemented. And you can go through, and there's basically a log of what's going on in here. So we can see it's compiling, it's doing testing. We can get to the MS build log file. It's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fully featured build system, and you can really customize that build as well. So if I come back over here and open up the build process template, we can see that it's just workflow. So if you're not familiar with Windows Workflow Foundation, it's basically just a bunch of activities. And you can customize these as much as you want. I mentioned that I was doing some testing with creating custom activities, but basically you can create custom workflow activities that you want and drop them into your build process. So really great feature. And something that you can use even as a personal developer or small developers or small teams, you can have an automated build process that versions your code for you. It creates a label as part of the build. There's so many different things that you can take advantage of and not have to worry about having some build script somewhere or someone press an F5 in Visual Studio, and that's what you use to deploy out.
Right. So I mean, I ran across one today. I was reading about with the Ajax library and really any JavaScript, Visual Studio has the ability to minify
the
JavaScript, which is basically taking out the white space, taking the variable names and shrinking them down to one letter so it saves on bandwidth when it's serving up the script. And you can actually hook that minification process into a build, which you don't really get that if
Absolutely.
You just say, well, I'm going to copy my files up to a web server.
Absolutely.
That's pretty
so
neat.
Common things that you could do as part of the build process are doing things like minifying your JavaScript, obfuscating your code if you have an obfuscator, building installers. You can build your installers and actually have an installer on the drop zone. Basically, you want an end-to-end process that is reproducible and just happens. You just let the computers do it. And
right.
All you have to worry about is checking in code and making sure.
What database-y things can you do in a build?
Especially if you use the database features, you can deploy your schema out to a test server, generate sample data. That's part of the features for the database edition. Run database unit tests or run unit tests that rely on that sample data. So you can do all sorts of stuff. You can create VM images for your team lab environment. You could deploy out to your test environment. Anytime a new build succeeds, you can deploy out if you want. So you can do all sorts of stuff with the build process, but that's one of the biggest areas that I really love about TFS.
Cool.
So if we have a second, I just want to let everyone know that some of the recent changes to MSDN subscriptions let you have a full production license of TFS included with your MSDN subscription. So that doesn't matter if you have the Professional Edition, the Ultimate Edition, or Premium Edition. You get TFS, a full TFS license
with
every MSDN subscription. And the prices haven't been announced for the Visual Studio 2010 release, but let's just say that the prices have dropped significantly for a resale copy of TFS 2010. It's super cheap. It might be around somewhere that VSS used to even cost. So if price was a concern for you during the 2008 and 2005 release, that shouldn't be anymore. So
we have there's a couple of questions in the queue.
Sure.
Doc is interested in knowing if there's any special settings or configurations for accessing TFS over a WAN. And so you mentioned you just set that up to get your...
Yeah. So if you have VPN, site-to-site VPN set up, that works automatically.
Sure. It's like accessing a website on your intranet.
Yeah, exactly. It would just be just like you were accessing even a source safe database network share. So
okay.
But yes, we did have some work to actually get TFS, like the reporting services site and all that kind of stuff, published out to the internet. I think there's a white paper out there for how to do it. It took me some time, so that's really one of those things that if you can't figure it out yourself, that's what we are. I didn't mention where I worked, but I work with Notion Solutions, and all we do is team system and TFS consulting. So sometimes it's good to just know when to ask for help, mm-hmm. whether that be free help through the MSDN forum. I know that I pick up on the forums quite a bit, especially in the beta forums for TFS 2010.
Right.
Or being able to call one of the Microsoft partners out there. So we can definitely get you in touch with some help. So.
Okay. And Andre wants to know if there's any hands-on labs yet for Team System 2010.
There are indeed. The DPE folks up in Redmond have put together it's in the same package as the rest of the Visual Studio 2010 hands-on
okay.
lab.
Okay.
We'll have to find that URL, but
yep, we'll post that after the show.
Yep, they just made a rev earlier this month, so.
Excellent.
What other questions we got in the queue?
There's one about having an interface between TFS and SourceSafe so that it can use TFS if my customers are using SourceSafe.
There's not really a synchronization yeah. kind of interface available. There is a platform that you can make a custom module to do that. There's on CodePlex, there's the TFS integration platform. So if you want to migrate or synchronize from something that doesn't have something already built, like the version or something like that, it's a good platform to start out with, but you have to do some custom development for creating the module for whatever you're trying to do. Okay. And I know that SourceSafe is not one of those modules that they have available.
Cool. Yeah. Well, our hour is just about up, Ed. This is a lot of really useful information. Let me go back to our GeekSpeak deck here and bring up a slide. I've got a couple of links. We've got our GeekSpeak blog where folks can follow up or get some follow-up information after the show. That's blogs.msdn.com/geekspeak. We've got a couple of topics coming up in the next few days. It looks like we're going to have some interesting information on Under the Hood with SQL Azure, and then we'll also be looking at Entity Framework 4 and some unit testing with Silverlight in the month of February. So this should be fun. You can see those upcoming GeekSpeak webcasts. Just go to msdngeekspeak.com. We'll also post recordings of the shows on Channel 9, so you can go to channel9.msdn.com/shows/geekspeak. I've got my blog and Brian's blog and Ed's blog all listed here. Ed, yours is edsquared.com, is that right?
That's the one.
Excellent.
And I try to blog as regularly as possible.
Fantastic. So thanks again for coming on. Look for the follow-up information in a couple of days from all the links of what we've mentioned here on our GeekSpeak blog. And thanks, Brian, for co-hosting.
Oh, you're welcome. This is a lot of fun. I'm actually excited to now set up TFS locally and use that.
Oh, yeah. Can't
Good
wait.
Deal.
Can't wait. And at this point, we'll hand it back over to Sydney to do some final wrap-up.